Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Well, hey, we had a lot of action this weekend. The fights that all promised action delivered. Very tragic ending to the Peter Quillin Cable 2X bout. We hope to have some updates on Mr. Truax, maybe sometime on our Tuesday show or maybe even next Sunday if he's available. But in the meantime, we're going to spend the night, at least part of the night, with Miss Melissa Smith. She's going to talk about the tremendous performance put on by Miss Alyssa Shields and some of the future of women's boxing, considering that there has been two preemptive challenges thrown out there. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Then we're going to bring on Mr. Ronnie Shields. Ronnie's going to talk about his latest heavyweight, some of the things that are possibly happening in his camp. And we hope to be joined by the professor during at least one of those sessions. So let's start out with Ms. Melissa Smith. And we're going to be joining, she's going to be joining us very shortly here. Always glad to have Melissa. Wish we could get her every week, but she always complains that I keep her up past her bedtime, so I'm going to have to be a little conscious of that tonight. Good evening, Melissa. How are you doing?
Oh, good evening. Now you're making me sound like I'm an old lady.
Well,
but I am getting up at 5 tomorrow, and I'm going to be in the gym by around 6:15, so I hope all is well.
Well, all is well out here on the left coast. We are basking in the sunshine right now compared to some of our Midwestern neighbors and whatnot. But, you know, that's another discussion for another time.
But there's no climate change. But as you say, it's another discussion for another time.
Okay. All right. we're having about April 20th in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and we don't know whether the lake's going to be frozen or exactly what's going to happen. But it's all a figment of our imagination. So anyway, let's get back to the business of boxing, and I have to admit, Melissa, I was probably one of the dubious spectators of Clarissa Shields, and I say that because it seemed to me that every fight that she had fought, no matter what way, she was either bigger or she had something that really made her stand out above her opponents. But even during the press conferences, I didn't quite realize, I guess, the stature of this hammer.
Mm.
And And when they got in the ring, and I saw how much bigger she was than Carissa, I'm like, maybe this is going to be a little interesting here. And then I saw, you know, I mean, some things that I hadn't seen in Carissa's arsenal.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, JK. There's a lot of static on the phone. Will you kindly repeat?
I said I was kind of surprised by the way Carissa handled herself inside. The bobbing, the weaving, that was kind of reminiscent of you know, the old school days. And, you know, I mean, hey, if I wasn't a believer before, I'm certainly a believer now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll start first with Christina Hammer, who is 5'11". She had a 3-inch height advantage over Clarissa. She's got a 3-inch reach advantage, and not only is she tall, but she fights tall and she carries herself very tall. She's also in remarkable condition, very fit. She's had an excellent. She had been 24-0 until this fight, and it's not as if she'd never fought decent competition. She had in Europe. Probably her strongest competition was a French fighter named Sophie Mathis, who did drop her to the ground. It was ruled a DQ because it was a situation where Hammer was holding on to her, because if you noticed in this fight, she has no inside game other than to hold on. And Mathis had a free hand and was hitting her in the head to let go. And as distinct from Sparkle Lee, who wasn't going to put up with anybody holding in this fight yesterday, the ref, which for that particular fight in Germany, just let them hold. And finally, Mathis hit her again on the side of the head, but it kind of came in from a backwards angle, and it knocked Christina Hammer out onto the ground. It was the fight was stopped. It was a DQ, and then eventually it became a no contest. So, you know, she had some weaknesses in that sense, and as I said, she's always. Her inside game consists of basically holding on until she can somehow get her way out of it and keep the distance. But Clarissa, as you rightly pointed out, had a remarkable game last night. Look, people cannot take away from her the fact that she has a 77-1 amateur record, which for women is a phenomenal number of fights. And I say that because, look, she started fighting at 11 years old. She started competing shortly thereafter, and she's really in the first generation of young women who really had the opportunity to do that in any consistent way, because just the opportunities in America have not been there. Amateur fighting was not legal in America until the mid 1995, 1996. The first teams were around 1999, 1998. So, she really has grown up in the sport at a time when women were allowed to grow up in the sport. And because of that, she had a very successful amateur career. It brought her all the way to the Olympics. And now as a professional, we have to remember this is only her 9th fight. And as you know from male boxers who transition from long amateur careers into the pros, it takes a while to change up your style. Plus, she's a very young fighter. She's 24 years old. She had her first Olympics and won gold at the age of 17. So she's had to do a lot to mature into a real boxer fighter, which is what she has become. And she has clearly clearly worked incredibly hard over the last year to make that transition effective. She's always known how to fight, but now she's really learning how to fight as a professional. And most importantly, she has learned to control her emotions in the ring. There were very few moments in that fight where she wasn't executing a picture-perfect fight game, including starting off in that first round kind of slow and tentative, just to, not so much tentative as just to feel out what her opponent was doing. And you could see the difference between the first and the second round. Her IQ was incredibly sharp, and she immediately knew what she needed to do to disrupt Hammer's game. She did it in the second round by jabbing with a jabber, totally taking away Hammer's only offensive opportunity, because she doesn't really have much more than a 1-2 punch. And by doing that, Ressa was able to set up her counters and, as you say, executed some really brilliant old-school defensive skills, movement, slickness, and just a real instinct for the weaknesses of her opponent. But what I saw also in that fight is that this is the future. There is no reason why there will not be many more Clarissa Shields to come. As I said, she has benefited from being able to compete as an amateur from the age of 11 or 12. There are now young girls her age or young teenagers up to 15, 16, 17 years old in programs such as Blanca Gutierrez's Beautiful Brawlers program out in California, where they have opportunities to train in a serious manner, to really learn to execute the game and to really compete, so that the professional ranks for female fighters in another 5-6 years are going to have benefited from this whole new generation of young women who are coming up in the sport as young teenagers or even 10, 11-year-olds, as the same way as their male counterparts. So they're really, really going to be prepared. And this is going to express itself in the professional ranks over the next few years. So there's a lot of really strong fighters coming up. Clarissa Shields is clearly pushing their way forward, and more than anything, because of who she is as a human being, she's not only trying to, you know, execute perfection as a boxer and to have herself known as the greatest woman of all time, which, you know, we can debate, but more than that, she's also paying it forward for what young women who come into the fight game can have after her. She really feels it is important to have equity in the sport, equity for in terms of pay equity, in terms of opportunity for promotion, and in terms of opportunity to be seen on broadcast outlets.
Now, I want to ask you, you know, right now we have, let's see, Jonathan Banks, he, of course, has a foreign female champion. But then we have Barry Hunter, and we also have John David Jackson that now have American female champs. So when we get back to Clarissa Shields, I want to kind of ask you, with the natural chip that she carries on her shoulder, and with John David Jackson probably, you know, carrying that still sour taste of the Kovalev debacle in his mouth, do you think that that has made for an even tougher team than what we might have seen ordinarily?
I don't know. I thought it was interesting. You know, he's very quiet with her, you know. In fact, even the commentators last night were noticing how much she was speaking in the corner. He was very sweet with her. He just was kind of keeping her calm more than anything else. I mean, I can't speak to the larger part of the question in terms of the Kovalev issues and what that means in terms of his relationship with her. I mean, look, she's a very strong-minded person and has a really keen understanding of what it is she needs in her life. And she walked away from her longtime coach when she realized, you know, I need to move. I need to get to the next level. And she, how they got together, I'm not entirely sure. Her and Clarissa Shields and David Jackson, but they've been able to forge a respectful relationship, which is something that you must have when you're working with Ressa. And also understanding that she has extraordinary raw talent and extraordinary ambition. And it's just a matter of figuring out how to calm her down and how to help her execute where she needs to go. She's in phenomenal physical condition, number one. And secondly, she's probably one of the hardest workers out there in boxing. She's right up. She does not slouch. She does not play. When she goes into training, she does the work she needs to do. And from a coach's perspective, from a trainer's perspective, that's amazing. That's the most amazing thing you can ever ask for, is someone that you can work with who's going to listen to you and is going to do the work. So I think for him, it's just a matter of figuring out how to be gentle with her and how to just motivate her to do what it is that she wants to do. And he's just there to help perfect what she already has. You can't change her, but what you can do is help her perfect what she already has. And what she already has is an instinct for fighting. As she says, I love to fight. So she's got a real instinct for it, and it's just a matter of sharpening the tools in her toolbox and helping to expand the dimensions of that toolbox. If you saw what she did in the ring yesterday, she had levels. She had offensive and defensive skills. She was able to control the ring. She was able to even control the ref in a way, if you think about it, in terms of how she was able to engage with the ref to make sure that she wasn't going to end up being, you know, held for hours at a time during that fight. There's a lot to be said for who Ressa is on her own, but in her relationship with her coach, she's really, I think they've been able to forge a partnership on how to get her where she needs to go. And the way that happens is you just have to listen to her. And I think in that sense, it's been a successful partnership.
Listen, I see the professor's here, so I have to turn it over to him. Otherwise, he might get very angry with me. So, Professor, how are you doing, Zeke?
I'm doing great. Hello, Melissa.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm enjoying the great conversation here.
So I thought you'd like to, you'd have a few questions of your own and some observations, Professor.
I wouldn't say questions, more observations of the fight. I thought it was a great fight. The things that I've noticed, because I've watched Clarissa's career just like Melissa has, but some things that I wanted to touch on, especially John David Jackson, is that I really have to take my hat off to him because since he became a part of her camp, I've really seen differences in and outside of the ring with Clarissa. If you've seen her interviews lately, even in All Access, and even in the, I've watched the post-fight press conference last night, and the way how she conducted herself and carrying herself and showed sportsmanship, I really think the bond that she has with John David Jackson is a great bond. In the fight, there was a time there was the seventh round, and she had exerted a lot of energy in that round because prior to that round, Hammer coach had told Hammer, "Hey man, you gotta throw the uppercut and you gotta be aggressive." And she came out real aggressive, so they had a aggressive round, and John got her in the corner and just calmed her down and just said, "Hey, I want you to just take this round to just take a step back and allow her to be the aggressive, and you just counter, and then make sure you stick to your jab and make sure you secure your defense." And he said it in such a calmly manner, and he just calmed her down, her old energy level. Then he made her take real deep breaths, and then she was so relaxed, and I really appreciate that. You know, that's something that's not spoken about. You haven't seen a lot of writers and people talking about it. You know, John David Jackson. And when JK alluded to the Kovalev situation, my perspective of what he was trying to say was like how it was like kind of maybe a little scar to John David's reputation, because they tried to make it seem like he wasn't a good coach because, you know, Kovalev was throwing dirt on him. So it was like getting with Clarissa and them being successful made them like a dynamic duo, made them, you know, tough because they both have something to prove. Am I getting it right, JK?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's basically what I was saying. You know, I mean, you know, it wasn't that any of, you know, that they necessarily weren't good separately. It was just that, you know, kind of connective tissue there, if you want to, you know, speak it of,
right,
you know, sir.
Well, right, but that's what I took away from the fight. Great communication. She was great performance. She showed you that she's working hard to get better. She showed her twisting at the waist, something that Canelo was very good at doing. I saw her finding her range, something that she didn't used to do. She used to smother her work, where she was very controlling of distance and range. And I just think it was a great performance. And she's looking to be great, willing to go down, willing to go up. You know, I think she's great for the sport, and my hat goes off to Christina Hammer for her great sportsmanship. And also, she stated, you know, hey, she's not backing away from any challenges, and she'll come back, be stronger, and a possible rematch down the line. So, you know, my hat goes off to the ladies.
Well, yeah, and with her, you know, she's young enough. She's 28. She's young enough to improve her game, you know, with just maybe some American coaching, because she's purely a European fighter. So there might be some opportunities for her. She certainly has talent, and she also works very hard and is in great physical shape. So there's nothing that says that she can't add dimensionality to her game to make her more competitive in a rematch.
Well, listen, I also have to kind of ask, and I know Showtime and HBO, I guess it's the two-minute round is part of their thing or their contract or whatever, but are we going to see a push now that we've had these higher-quality women, even headline fights now? Are we going to see a push, you think, for three-minute rounds?
Yes, I think we will, and I think we have to, because the fight last night will become more and more of what the norm of women's boxing is going to look like over the next several years. Because, as I said, you have a whole generation of young women, both in the United States and around the world, and especially if you look at, you know, the way Mexican women fight and fighters out of Argentina and so on, who are really skilled, who always train at 3-minute rounds, who typically spar men and women at 3-minute rounds when they're preparing for fights. And you know, there's just no reason not to have 3 minutes anymore. Just look, in MMA, women fight 5-minute rounds, the same as the men. There's no difference. And it's, to continue to have 2-minute rounds is just farcical. And it really takes away from the fight. Can you imagine the difference in the fight last night if it was 3 minutes rather than two? Would have had a totally different fight. So I think the skill level of these women is such that it's doing a disservice to their ability to grow in the sport, to continue to insist that these be 2-minute rounds. And if we're really pushing for the kind of equity that is necessary for the sport to grow as a whole, never mind women's boxing, but just boxing in general, whereas we've talked in the past about the need to really infuse more interest and more opportunity into the sport as a whole by having equity in terms of 3-minute rounds, I think we will see a much more exciting growth of the sport over time.
Also, I guess kind of along that same vein, Carissa and her team talked about her possible opponents. And as you said, you know, up or down, what do you think, what are you looking for Melissa?
Carissa, well, you know, she called out Cecilia Bracus, you know, who's also undisputed. So that'll be extraordinary if that happens. I mean, she's smaller. She's a very tough fighter and typically is on the top of everyone's pound-for-pound list for female fighters. I think it would be a very competitive fight. Clarissa looking the way she looked last night, and if she continues her tutelage under John David Jackson, I think there's every opportunity for her to defeat Cecilia Bracus as well. That would be an extremely competitive fight. It would be challenging for Carissa to come down to 154. But if she's willing to do it, and look, she was able to make weight easily for this fight at 160. So if she could trim the next 6 pounds in such a way that it's healthy for her, that would be an extremely exciting fight. She's talked about Savannah Marshall, who is someone who's she competed with in the amateurs. It's actually the only fight she ever lost. She's also tall. They're the same age. Savannah Marshall is 5'11". She has not had as many fights professionally. I'm not exactly sure. You know, I think she had been with Mayweather for a while. Right now she's at 5-0, and she really hasn't fought anyone strong in the professional ranks, but that's certainly someone to consider if she gets a few more fights under her belt. I think she last fought in November of 2018, and as I said, I'm not entirely certain if she's still with the Mayweather team, but that's certainly one way to go. Probably Cecilia Bracus would be the biggest fight to do within the next several months.
Does it seem like the relationship that even though that you know, I mean, you're still talking about, you know, Mayweather, and you're still talking about some of the big male names as far as promotions, but you see it like maybe being easier to put together female fights, you know, considering all of these BS fights that we've had put together, you know, on the male side?
I don't, because look, you know, Heather Hardy won her WBO title back in, what, November or October over Shalito Vincent, and she hasn't been able to get a fight. I mean, it's just been nuts. So I don't agree that it is any easier for female champions to get fights as male champions. There's still a lot of this jockeying and which television show it's going to be on. You know, the same kind of dysfunction in the male side of the game exists in the female side of the game, only amped up because there are fewer fighters and fewer opportunities. So I don't think we're there yet. Then again, you know, Clarissa has a very savvy team in terms of her promoter and her media company. So, and perhaps with Stephen Esposito must be at Showtime, must be over the moon today. So maybe things will open up a little bit. But I don't agree that it's particularly easier for women to get fights, especially at that kind of level. It's really quite difficult.
Melissa and Jabron, we have one of the best trainers out there. Every year I'm considering him as my trainer of the year, but I'm a little prejudiced. Hey guys, we're joined by Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, man. How you guys doing?
We're doing great and glad to have you on. So I'm going to kind of open up the conversation here. Of course, I want to talk about your big boy. First we had one guy walk out the ring, and then we have another demolishment. So, Ronnie, he praises, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, this guy, you know, F.L. Jocelyn. He's really a good guy. He's a great guy to work with. He's definitely going to be a force in the heavyweight division in the next few years. But in the meantime, he's fighting on April the 27th in Las Vegas, and it'll be on Showtime.
Professor, do you want to start out?
Sure. How you doing, Ronnie Shields? Just
doing great.
Just a quick question on the heavyweight division. I see that they're talking about these networks, and I know I've heard you in some interviews called Dead Zone. And also with Jamal Charlo. Do you see that this Cold War is going to come to an end very soon? Because it seems that the American fans and the feedback here in the last couple of weeks haven't been very good with them, especially with the Tyson Fury opponent being named. What's your thoughts on that, and do you think it will come to an end very soon?
Well, I don't think it's going to come to an end anytime soon. I think everybody is fighting for, you know, everybody is trying to fight for a certain position that they're trying to get in to get all their fighter fights. And I think when Al Hammer came on board and he signed a contract with Fox Sports 1 and Showtime, that forced everybody else to go out and try to get deals also. So, and this is why, you know, the people came up with the Zone and ESPN Plus, you know, the Top Rank, you know, because I guess they felt left out. So they had to try to make deals. But, you know, but the problem with that is that they don't have as many fighters as our human does. And this is why Top Rank had to sign Tyson Fury to a co-promotional contract, because they don't have a heavyweight. They don't have anybody that, you know, they don't have a whole lot of fighters and they can keep up with, you know, keeping fights on a regular basis. on television. So, and with the Zone, you know, De La Hoya, he got his own deal, you know, and of course, Herman has his own deal, and, you know, there's a few other people that's trying to get their own deal, like Triple G. He's trying to get his own stuff. So, you know, look, I mean, you know, boxing is competition. And now, what's going to happen is when you have a guy that's a mandatory, then all of these networks are going to be bidding because they're going to want it on their network. And so that just makes it so much better for boxers, I think, because, you know, because especially for the fighters, because the fighters is the ones who benefit, and they're supposed to benefit because they put in their lives and get in their ring time after time. So I think it's a good deal. And, you know, so, you know, people say, oh, you're not going to get the best fights. But I think you will get the best fights because they're going to be forced to fight each other.
Now, with you being Jamal's trainer, how does it make you feel being in the position that all the champions currently at the middleweight division is on the Zone and he's on the other side of the fence?
Well, you know, again, you know, he's a mandatory guy right now. But, you know, but the thing about it is a champion, that supersedes the mandatory. So whether they was on the same network as Jamal or not, it still supersedes Jamal. So, you know, if after Danny Jacobs, whoever wins the Danny Jacobs fight, say he wins, well, he's going to probably look to fight not Jamal. He's probably going to look to fight Demetrius Andre because who had the WBO title? Then all the belts will be unified. So then the next fight would have to be Jamal. So, look, we have a lot of patience. You know, we have a lot of patience, and that's what you have to have in this sport. You know, we can't make things happen that's out of our control. So, look, Jamal is the mandatory, but Danny Jacobs is a world champion. So he has to fight Canelo, but Canelo has to fight him. You know, that supersedes the number one challenger. So, you know, so we have a lot of patience, but when it's our time, all we're going to do right now is stay busy, just keep fighting, and keep winning, and when it's our time, and we're not in a rush, you know, we got plenty of time, you know, as long as we stay busy, we're going to be good.
Before I throw it to JK, I just want your thoughts on Clarissa Shields' performance last night. And do you think it's too soon for them to be crowning her the greatest woman of all time?
Well, I really think she's a really good fighter. You know, I think she proved that last night. In her victory last night, she looked really great. Great last night. She had a, you know, it was out of a 10, I gave her a 12. She really, really showed that she is right now the best fighter in boxing on the women's side. I think she proved that last night. And I just don't see anybody else that's coming up that can compete with her, you know. So, you know, I mean, I would have to agree with her. She is right now, as of this moment, she is the best woman fighter in the world right now. I just don't see nobody else that can contest with her, you know. You know, but the problem with women's boxing is you only have a handful of fighters that can compete with each other. And that's going to be the problem that they're going to run into. You know, I mean, I think what they did last night, and I just wish the ratings was just overwhelmingly great because it was really, you had two champions fighting each other. Didn't matter if it was men or women to be, but you had two champions fighting each other, and Clarissa proved last night that she was the best middleweight in the world. But I think she's the best woman fighter in the world right now anyway. But the problem is, what's next for her? You know, it's not like, you know, you have 1,000 other women that can compete at that level. You don't have that. So that's going to be the only knock I see for women boxing.
Well, all right. Thank you, Ronnie Shields. I'll throw it to JK.
Actually, I'm going to throw it over to Melissa. She can comment or add Bonnie's comments or, you know, talk to Mr. Shields.
Well, yeah, I'll take a longer view in terms of historically. I think it's a little early to crown her the greatest woman of all time, but she's certainly not at the top of her game yet. She showed us she executed a beautiful fight last night at a very high level from the standpoint of the middleweight and super middleweight division. There really isn't anyone comparable at this point who can fight her, in my opinion. Probably her best opponent will be Cecilia Bracus, who is quite excellent with a very sharp game. Although she might be a little too old, frankly. She's in her late 30s, so it might be that it won't be ultimately that competitive because of that. But we'll see if they're able to make the fight. In terms of other weight classes, like the lightweight class, there are certainly more fighters and with a lot of talent. And Katie Taylor is a phenomenally talented fighter that is has probably a very similar skill set and a similar kind of background, very strong amateur background and now a very strong professional background. So in terms of a different weight class, she's someone to really consider and also has that same kind of sense of wanting to pay it forward in terms of paving the way for younger women who will follow her into the sport. I'm humbled by Caressa because she has a tremendous passion for what she is doing, both as a fighter, but also as a seeing that she has a role for herself publicly, and I think she will become a phenomenal ambassador, if you will, for the sport of boxing. But she also has the opportunity to really push that envelope of what sport can mean for women and men, but especially for young women, as a way of having them break out of the kind of poverty and circumstance that she found herself in as a young girl in Flint, Michigan. So that can't be discounted from her boxing as well, because she twins the both of them very effectively. So I think there are a lot of brilliant things that will come out of this. Whether she will be able to benefit from having truly competitive opportunities during the years of her sort of greatest activity in the sport is to be seen, because there just are not a lot of women at that level of experience and technical skill and talent at middleweight, super middleweight, for her to fight at this point. But her willingness to come down even to the 154 will certainly give her a terrific opportunity again with Cecilia Bracus. And more than anything, she's exciting and dynamic in a sport that really needs, that is driven by that kind of personality. So she has the opportunity to really spark interest in women in the sport in a way that has not existed since Leila Ali contested 15 years ago. So in that sense, it's a very exciting time for women in boxing.
Melissa, we thank you so much for your time tonight. And why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, and any final thoughts you have tonight?
Sure. Well, thank you so much, as always, JK, for the opportunity to come on the show. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Girl Boxing Now. I also have a Facebook page, Girl Boxing, and a blog, girlboxing.org. I'm also the author of A History of Women's Boxing, which is the first attempt to really provide an in-depth history of the sport that goes all the way back to the 1720s on through the first Olympics in 2012. I really appreciate the time that you all put into speaking about the female side of the sport. There's a lot of opportunity over the next couple of years for continued growth, and I appreciate that you provide a platform for that. Thank you very much, and wish you all a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Melissa. Look forward to having you back soon. Ronnie, I was mentioning the relationship between John David Jackson and Clarissa Shields, and I brought up the point of with the way that Clarissa is so motivated, that was one aspect of the game. But what do you think about John David Jackson after he's been through all of the criticism from the Kovalev team and all that? I mean, do you think this was somewhat of a justification for him also?
Well, you know, I don't think John David Jackson had to prove anything after the Kovalev debacle. You know, I think, you know, people that know John David Jackson know that he's a great trainer, and he was a former world champion. He was a great fighter as well. So I don't think he had to prove anything to anybody that he was this or that because things didn't work out between him and Sergey Kovalev. You know, but I think, you know, he's always proven that, you know, just look at the fighters he's trained and see what he's done with those guys. You know, and to me, that's proof in itself. You know, so whoever questioned him as a trainer, you know, obviously they wasn't looking at everything that he's done in the sport of boxing, because they, you know, people that know him and knows boxing know that John David Jackson is a great trainer.
We've seen some of these younger guys, start to take their place. Teofilo Lopez is one that kind of comes to mind right off the top of your head. And, of course, there are numerous prospects around in the lower divisions. Ronnie, we're talking about the middleweight division, the junior middleweight division, and especially, you would say, the junior middleweight, and you're talking about Errol Spence, Keith Thurman, those guys. What do you see now as probably the most dangerous young guy out there for some of these seasoned champions?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, you know, just pick out one name, especially in the welterweight division. You know, Errol Spence is so good that, you know, I don't see anybody beating him right now in a welterweight division, you know. But although there's some good fights up there, you know, some really, really tough fights up there. You know, I think Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence probably are 1 and 2 in a division, you know, in a welterweight division. So, you know, Keith Thurman's not too far behind, you know, and neither is Sean Porter. And I think these guys are seasoned pros now. And I think people have always seen that these guys were always at the top. So, you know, there's not many losses between any of those guys. Matter of fact, you may have 1 or 2 losses in there. But with the 4 guys I just named, I mean, those are the top 4 guys in the worldwide division. So, you know, and for me personally, like I say, I think I put Errol Spence at the top of the division. So, but as far as the middleweight division goes, you know, it's the same thing. You know, you got the 3 champions. You got Danny Jacobs, Demetrius Andre, Canelo Alvarez, and then, you know, you have my guy Jamal Charlo. You know, I mean, look, the middleweight division is a stacked division. is tough for anybody that's trying to be a contender in that division. It's tough. It's hard. But this is what boxing is all about. You know, it's not one guy that's going to control everything, because any of those guys is liable to beat the other. So that's why I keep telling people every day that boxing is in a great state right now. You know, really, really competitive fights out there. We just got to make the fights happen.
Ronnie, another question that I've kind of tossed around, you know, and I think it started to me with the twins when one brother saw the other brother losing. And not saying, you know, that it was any – well, yeah, I think that there were some visible signs that your fighter just didn't quite have the aggressiveness, maybe didn't have his head in the game as much as he usually would have. And I also noticed the same thing in the Peterson brothers, which is, I'm not saying that you know, Lamont might not, he might have lost that fight on his own. But I thought he looked rather sluggish when you saw his, you know, they were showing him in the locker room. You could see the despair on his face. Ronnie, you know, with the closeness of the social media and all that, when you compare that to when you were fighting, do you think that the closeness of these fighters, the friendliness, the rapport, do you think that sometimes now they are not tough enough to watch some of their brothers lose, you know, similar to you guys, you know, back in the day? We didn't have that problem.
Well, you know, I think like this, you know, you know, I think you're correct that back in the day, that wouldn't have fazed anybody, maybe not fazed anybody. But it's hard to say for twins, because twins are so different than just brothers, you know, because they're like one. And, you know, I was hoping before the fight that when they had the coin toss, that Jamal lose. I was hoping that he lost the contest. I was really, really, I was praying that he lost that coin toss, because I didn't want him to be the main event. I wanted him to go before his brother. And, you know, and I think that, you know, when you have twins, the bond is so different. And I could tell when I was warming Jamal up, you know, that it was going to be a problem, you know, if his brother lost. I mean, I knew it, because he was, you know, while I was warming up, you know, I had to warm him up in between rounds, because, of course, he wanted to watch the fight. And, you know, he was trying to wear his brother through. And although we all thought his brother won the fight, you know, he didn't get the decision. So, you know, but right after that, after the decision, I just seen that drop in his whole mental attitude. So I knew he was going to have problems then. But, you know, I kind of put him to the side and I talked to him. I said, look, you know, you and your brother are two separate people. You have a family. You have a life. You can't live your life through your brother. You have to live it through you. And I think that kind of brought him out of it a little bit. But it affected him a little bit at the beginning. But then he picked it up like a true champion, and, you know, and he came in and won the fight. So, but this will probably be the last time you see these two guys on the same card ever again, you know, unless it can be helped.
Ron, you want to interject there? Because, you know, we kind of discussed this.
Well, that was the question that I was going to ask. So you basically asked the question for me. So I kind of figured we spoke about this topic before, and that was my response, that I don't think going forward that would be a good idea for them to fight on the same card, just for the emotional aspect of it, especially going into a championship fight.
Absolutely, you know, and that was the thing. But again, like I said, you know, before the fight, I even told Jamal, man, I hope you lose the coin toss because I don't want you to be the main event. Because, you know, you never know what can happen in a fight. But that was always on my mind from the very beginning. They said it was going to do a coin flip to see who the main event was going to be. And I just, you know, with me having trained both of these guys for so long at the same time for so many years, I know their emotions, and I know I've been knowing their emotions for a very long time, better than anybody. So I knew if he lost, what kind of problems that, you know, that we may be presented with going into the fight.
Ronnie, I've also kind of noticed that you've seemed to cut down on the number of younger fighters that right now you're working with. Are you starting to put more time into your champions, or have you know the raw talent? Are you just waiting for the Olympics and the Olympic trials to see what raw talent is available?
Well, you know, I'm definitely not waiting on the Olympics for myself, especially, you know, I got some good young fighters right now, and they all are really doing great, you know. And I'm not waiting on the Olympics because it may not be in the Olympics, from what I understand, because of everything that's going on. They finally forced the president of the Olympics for the United States Olympic Committee to step down. Somebody else just got the job, I think. And so now they're going to vote on it to see whether these guys can go to the Olympics or not. But, you know, but you have so many guys right now that are 17, 18 years old that are turning pro because they are so worried that they're going to take boxing out of the Olympics right now. And there's a strong possibility that that's going to happen. But even if it don't happen, you know, they're telling these kids if your birthday is not on a certain day, then you got to wait until you're about 22 years old before you can go, you know. It depends on when your birthday is, you know. And you have to at least be 18. But if your birthday don't come at a certain day, just think if you're a 17-year-old kid about to turn 18, but at a certain date that the Olympics is going to be on, if you don't turn 18 by that date, then you have to wait another 4 years. So that's telling the kid, well, you can't fight in the Olympics at 18, but you can at 22. What do you think these kids are going to do? They're going to turn professional, like they already have started. They have started. So many 17, 18-year-old kids right now are turning pro just because of that. So, you know, I just don't understand this amateur stuff anymore. You know, they need to get themselves together because it's going to affect a lot of these young kids, that these kids are not going to have an opportunity to go to the Olympics because they are making these guys wait, you know, to turn 18 at a certain point in their life.
But not only that, Ronnie, but, I mean, what about this professional athletes being allowed to fight amateurs in the Olympics? I mean, this seems very overmatched to me and very unfair.
Well, you know, I don't think you'll get the best fighters. You know, I don't think you'll get world champions, you know, trying to go to the Olympics. I just don't see that happening. You know, guys, because it's you know, what to say, well, I'm going to go get a gold medal. I'm not going to get no money when I'm going to get a gold medal. I think right now, you know, with the money in professional boxing, the way it is right now, we don't have any worries about, you know, the top guys trying to go down and fight for a medal and no money.
I hear you, especially with everybody throwing money around the way they are now today. But hey, Ronnie, thanks so much for joining us tonight, man. I'm glad you were able to take the time out, and any final thoughts you might have for us tonight, and how are things going over there at Plex, man?
Oh, man, things are great at Plex, and, you know, I just want people to just keep in mind that April 27th, you will see the fast-rising heavyweight F.A. Ajakbo on Showtime, April the 27th.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks so much, man. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely.
That was Mr. Ronnie Shields. Always good talking to Ronnie. It's been a while since we had him on the show.
Yeah, I hope the opponents show up and actually stay for after the instructions and everything.
Hey, but I mean, it's like I was saying, you know, about Christina Hammer. You know, I mean, you know, Hammer. You know, when you looked at her in the press conference, I didn't think she was quite that big. But then, when the bell rang and she stood out there above Clarissa Shields, I'm thinking like, well, you know, maybe it is time for a fight. So I'm imagining, you know, like the guy that's in the other corner, you know, he probably looks at him at the president, you know, and whatnot, and, you know, he gets those thoughts. But then when you look at this giant of a man over there in the other corner with bad intentions, and both of y'all are only 4 or 5 round fighters, you know, hey, it's got to be kind of imposing, man.
Oh, yeah. But there's a lot of action this weekend, and I'll say it was a lot of boxing. I wouldn't say it was a lot of great boxing, but it was a lot of boxing this week.
Yes.
But I'm happy that, you know, there was boxing on multiple platforms and different places where people can be able to see it and it be more accessible, because I'm loving when I'm watching basketball and the playoffs and I'm seeing commercials and stuff of boxing. It just makes me so happy to know that the sport is alive, when people be saying, man, boxing is dead. But, you know, I'm seeing it all the time in billboards and on the side of buses in New York City. I see Deontay Wilder on the side of buses now, all over the place.
Hey, and I thought that PBC program yesterday was very good for boxing. Even though the Truax Cullen fight never really had a chance to take place, but all that they were showing, I thought that was a very good PBC broadcast. I know we push women's boxing, we talk a lot about women's boxing, but what does it tell you when probably the most interesting fight of the weekend was a woman's headliner?
Yeah, you know, I can't wait to see what the numbers are going to be as far as the ratings, but I think it should be definitely good ratings, because throughout the day, I've heard a lot of people talking about it. I mean, like in the corner store, just in the department store, I just heard people online in different places just, you know, talking about the fight. I was shocked, you know. And just, you know, I know you can't judge a book by a cover, but of the people that I did see talking about it, you wouldn't think these people would be watching boxing.
Right. And I mean, let's be, you know, truthful here. I mean, even though Lomachenko was fighting, to me, the best fight was Clarissa Shields and Hammer, and it should be interesting to see if Clarissa Shields does outdraw Lomachenko, what kind of ramifications that this will have in the future? Meaning if they would put Lomachenko up against Clarissa Shields again, would she be able to be the draw? I mean, you know, Lomachenko is the golden child right now.
Hold up. I'm glad you just said that word, golden child. You just made me think about something. What in the history of boxing, right? Well, I'm going to just say in my lifetime, we'll just say the last 3 to 4 decades. When have you seen the pound-for-pound fighter in boxing fighting on a Friday?
Hey, Andre. Well, you got to remember, you know, I go back a little bit longer than you, so, you know, I can go back to Sugar Ray Robinson and all those guys, even Muhammad Ali, because that was the venue. Friday night fights, to like Cavalcade of Sports. So, you know, but...
Well, but let's that, say but the I'm pay-per-view sure. era. Let's just say the pay-per-view era. Because they wasn't having the... That was worldwide sports and all that stuff back then. The pay-per-view era, when have you seen a pound-for-pound fighting on a Friday?
Okay, hey, you get no arguments from me. I'm just saying, you know, but this is the way that things are supposedly, you know, I mean, we've always thought, you know, here's the men and they're the headliners and, you know, we can throw anybody, you know, on the undercard, which they practically did, but I digress. Anyway. You know, and I mean, look, not only just Friday, the Saturday venue wasn't that all that hot either. You know.
No, my whole thing is that I'm just getting ticked off with them disrespecting Terrence Crawford, who here's a gentleman that was undisputed in 2 weight division, right? Now he's moving up to the 3rd weight division to try to be undisputed. He's undefeated. He sell out in Omaha. You know, he got pay-per-views. And they calling this guy Lomachenko the pound for pound. And this dude fighting on a Friday in a venue that holds like 3,000, like 3,500 people, like he was fighting in the harbor in D.C. Like, where is this big audience? The pound for pound supposed to be selling out arenas, supposed to be having pay-per-views. So it's like they putting their foot in their mouth. They trying to sell this narrative that he's the pound for pound, but he's not.
Well, you know, come on, they tried to do the same thing with Chocolatito, remember?
Oh yeah, we see what happened to him.
You know, but that's you know, let's talk a little bit about the Lomachenko fight. You know, everybody's talking about, you know, how he stopped Corolla in the 4th round, but wasn't he supposed to? I mean, come on, did anybody really think that this fight was going to be competitive, you know, showing Lomachenko underwater and you know, they showed Corolla doing, you know, the PBC fight, you know, they're, you know, running and whatnot, but come on. I mean, we all know it's kind of like the Fury fight. I mean, right now, they Top Rank can't afford to let Lomachenko lose. I don't care what they talk about, this fight, that fight, and the other. I think this Gervonta Tank Davis is all a smokescreen because, once again, you can't kill, you know, the golden goose. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you're noticing that it seemed like he's supposed to be stepping up in competition or fighting his mandatories and all this stuff, but his body breaking down. Every time you turn around, he's hurt. Now he got another injury, his hand. So he sustained an injury in the Crowley fight. So now he's probably going to be out until the end of the year or the beginning of the next year, depending on how severe the hand injury is.
I want to stay on this weekend though. Showtime, even you know though the Clarissa and Christina Hammer was the main event. What did you think about the heavyweight that we were treated to?
You know, he get in some more shape, you know, lose a little bit more weight, and I think he could get some people some problems.
But why are, I mean, my point being, is this the era of the Michelin man? I mean, you know, you didn't see, you know, guys like Layman Brewster, the Klitschko's, even Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson until, you know, I mean, these guys in the beginning of their careers look like most fighters that I'm used to looking to at the end of their careers. Am I being too critical of the training methods? I mean, none of these guys look like they're in fighting shape. And my point being is, if you have these bad habits now, while you're down in the prospect level, how in the hell do you think that you're going to overcome them when you get up to, say, the Dominic Brazil level? You know, are you going to be the immovable punching bag, you know, that the guys just beat on because you can't wobble your ass around the ring, or what?
Well, you know, when you're coming up in your neighborhood and you beating everybody, you knocking everybody out, well, you know, you feel you don't have to work as hard because you feel there's no competition. But then once you step up competition and you see that it's levels to it, then you become a work in progress. But that you might end up hitting a wall because you feel like, oh man, I got to go back to the back of the line and start all over again. And you might not get as motivated because you're depressed because you lost. And now you done put on more weight, and now you're not training like you're supposed to. And next thing you know, you just become that journeyman or you know, gatekeeper or club fighter or a sparring partner, you know. So that's what happens a lot of times, you know, with the heavyweight. They depend on that power. We just seen it. The example of Deontay getting ready for this fight, saying he going back to the basics. You know, he ain't jumped rope in years. You know, he just sparred and hit the pads a little bit. So that's what it is.
Well, but here's what I'm saying. Okay, you want to attract new fans, you want to keep your old fans, and you're presenting something new to them, which is quality women's boxing at the highest level. But then in between that, you serve the fans like going to the White House to get McDonald's. Yeah, I mean,
that was a good one. That was a good one. I get where you was going with it now, JK. You was big fan, like, you know, all right, these guys deserve to fight and they, you know, deserve to feed their family. But why are you going to feed the fans that level of competition on that statue of a fight card? Like, we're trying to bring more fans to the sport, not run them away.
Right, right, right. You know, and then the first fight I turned on, I'm looking at two Rock'em Sock'em robots. Yeah, I mean, really?
Right. Well, you know, I guess we can't.
I mean, that's also the responsibility of the promoters, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, yeah, that was horrible. I can't even try to take up for that one on that one. That was just horrible.
Yeah. So, are you looking forward to the matchup, Anthony Joshua and Big Baby? Have you heard anything about that? Any news?
Joshua just talking in the media this week, you know, trying to talk tough, talking about, you know, it's going to be a massacre and he's going to demolish Miller and all this stuff. So, you know, we're going to see. I can't wait to see what both of them going to do. I want to see a good fight, and I think it's going to be a good fight. But we have Terrence Crawford and Amir Khan coming up this week. Will it go the distance, JK?
You mean from the dressing room to the ring? Yeah, it'll go that distance. I mean, basically, this should be another Lomachenko versus Kolok, basically. I mean, it might go six rounds, maybe, but Terrence, to me, too much skill. I don't see Khan being able to stand up to the pressure, especially if we get to Khan that fought Canelo. And I'm not saying that was a bad Khan. I'm just saying it was a bad matchup. And I think, once again, this is a bad matchup. As far as the fight is concerned, but as far as Khan and the bank is concerned, it's probably a perfect matchup.
Now, I'll play devil advocate. What if this fight goes 12 rounds and is a very competitive fight? What does that do for Bob Arum and Terrence Crawford?
Actually, I'm going to say that Terrence Crawford is kind of in a win-win situation here, because if he goes the distance and Khan looks competitive, then it gives everybody that, I think it would give him that false sense of security that, you know, Crawford's beatable, you know, and you know, just like, you know, De La Hoya, oh, yeah, you know, everybody has the blueprint now. So, you know, let's beat up on him while he's down and we can see the weakness. So, you know, I can see him getting just as many offers that way as, you know, when you know, if he would knock him out in spectacular fashion, then, you know, that also makes good press, you know, pound for pound, Errol Spence against Terrence Crawford for the pound for pound title or something like that. So I can see it being a win-win for Terrence Crawford, especially from a promotional standpoint. I could be wrong, but this is the way that you know, if I was a publicist or a promoter, that's the way I would handle it. You know, I mean, it would kind of be like you do for the Super Bowl champions. You print up two sets of T-shirts, you know, and you start selling them after the fight. So, yeah, I'd be down either way.
So, do you think that if it went 12 rounds and it was competitive, of course, Crawford still won, that will give Bob Arum more reason to keep Crawford on that side of the fence, meaning for Bob not have to do a cross promotion with PBC, with one of the champions, and just, you know, milk his WBO belt and fight the, you know, the top ranked guy.
Well, Bob is, I'm really thinking that if this fight goes the distance to protect himself and to protect his investment, then yeah, we might have Terrence Crawford go on the Bob Arum diet. But, you know, we've seen fighters, you know, buck up against these things before, and you know, it wouldn't be the first time that a fighter had to sue Bob Arum for inactivity, and Bob doesn't mind. So, you know, it's not like Bob's afraid to go into court. But
I'm not saying inactivity, but he'll just, you know, put him in there with less of opponents. I mean, none of the champions.
Well, of course not, because there are no champions on that side. So he could, I mean, who could he pair him up with unless, you know, something would happen. But anyway, you know, not looking at that, I mean, you know, I think Boo Boo and Bob have had their little fling at the dance, right? And, now Terrence Crawford, you know, I mean, if it should happen to work out that way, I'm just saying, you know, it might not be in activity as we see it, but when, you know, if you're fighting for purses that are below, you know, your status, you know, Crawford's been able to sit down at the table. Crawford, Timothy Bradley was talking about the silk sheets. You know, it's hard to go back to cotton after you're sleeping on silk.
Most definitely. But what's your thoughts on Canelo basically backing Triple G into the corner and telling him the only way he's going to get the third fight is he has to get a belt? So that means he would have to fight Boo Boo.
Well, see, I mean, okay. Here's the thing. Does anybody consider Triple G a fan magnet anymore? I mean, you know, it was Canelo that made the Triple G fight. It wasn't the other way around. So, I mean, it sounds good, but I think it's just Canelo, you know, saying, you know, thanks but no thanks, and you know, if you get lucky along the way, then, you know, then we can talk. But right now, you know, like I said, you know, you talk about, you know, the Bob Arum diet for Terrence Crawford. I'm really, really skeptical of the diet that we're going to see from Canelo after this Danny fight. I'm looking for, you know, a few laughers, sleepers, whatever you want to call them, you know, for the next at least two to three, maybe four fights after this Danny Jacobs fight. And
sorry to cut you off, JK, but that was part of his statement. He said he wants to be undisputed middleweight champion by the end of 2019. So in order for that to happen, he got to beat Danny and then beat Demetrius Andre, right? But he's forcing Triple G to face Demetrius for the belt, and if Triple G beats Demetrius, then they can have the third fight.
You know, I just to say this because he's a really good friend of the show, but it kind of like looks like to me that Abel is going to have to put up a shut up with the statement that he was making about African American fighters not so long ago.
Well, not even that. Look
over on that side. Who else is there? Except for, I mean, you know, I think they all look like me, except for Canelo. might not have as much gray, but, you know, I think I could find him down the lineage somewhere.
Right. But
yeah,
they definitely going to have to put up a shut up. And did you hear the opponent that they might have? It's coming down to Ndom, and I ain't even going to.
Yeah.
And some other guy that I've never heard of, like nobody ever heard of.
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, when is good skills, but when has Ndom really, you know, made that much of an impact that you want to, you know, call him what, anything more than a gatekeeper?
Yeah. Top contender.
Yeah, but the contender's over now. Oh, no, you were talking about, I'm sorry, excuse me.
No, I'm just saying he's a top contender. That's about it. He's not a champion.
Right. You know, before we go, man, you know, something that I really kind of neglected to, I guess, celebrate properly just because of the relationship between, you know, Barry Hunter and as I always mentioned, Lamont was one of the first fighters that ever came on the show I ever had a chance to interview. And it was rather sad but expected to see his retirement, especially after the way things turned out. We wish him well in his retirement. Hopefully we can get him and Barry on the show sometime soon. But to a career well established, well fought, and most of all, you know, coming from the background, being a real ambassador as well as promoter of the sport, and someone, you know, that has greatly elevated himself from homelessness to world champion. So thank you for all of the bouts, Lamont, and hey, man, we wish you success outside of the ring. Those are my final thoughts for the evening, Jabron, and you can give yours. Make sure you tell everybody where they can find you on social media. Of course, they can find me on the Pugilist Corner, as well as kingscrib.com, and always on Blog Talk Radio on either Sunday nights here on the Weekend Wrap or Tuesdays on the Dog Pound with K9 Boxing. So I check out, thank you everyone for listening, and Jabron, your final thoughts for this evening.
Yeah, as you touched on Lamont Peterson, I'd like to thank him also for his hard work and dedication, and I saw a little interview clip of him speaking on retirement. He's speaking of going to get the degree and getting to boxing and sports medicine and science and things of that sort. And I think that is a great and wonderful thing about getting more education and being a great ambassador for the sport. And, man, I take my hat off to him and Barry Hunter, man. They had a great run, and wish them plenty of success going forward. And thanks to Melissa Smith for coming on tonight and Ronnie Shields. Shout outs to the champ, Layman Brewster, and John Scully, is normally here. Hope everything is going great with those guys and can't wait to have them back. And tune in this week. It'll be Amir Khan versus Terrence Bud Crawford. The pay-per-view will be $69.99. And keep supporting boxing. I'm Jabron Clemens. You can find me on Facebook. That's J-A-B-R-A-N. Clemens, C-L-E-M-O-N. And find us next week here on the Weekend's Wrap. And, of course, Tuesday, J.K. and K-9 Bunbridge with the Dog Pound Show. So that's my final thoughts. And, J.K., if you have anything else to say. If not, tune in next week. And I'm Jabron.
Oh, by the way, I'm glad you mentioned it, Jabron. The Pugilist Corner and Team Certified, we will be at the Boxing Expo and looking around for, you know, just some of the fans and some of the new products open. And Jabron, hey, man, I do have a little extra room, man. If you want to hit Las Vegas between, on that Canelo weekend, man, I got room. So, hey, just hit me up. So have a great night, everyone. Talk to you later.